Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Regan, and I'm an addiction counselor, a licensed addiction counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. I'm also a certified grief counselor. Welcome to a program that we call Recovery Chronicles. On this program every week, we celebrate recovery, and we do that especially by interviewing a person in long-term recovery. And our guest today is Margot Walking Elk, and a person in long-term recovery. Thank you so very much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? What were your growing up years like?
Well,
big question.
I grew up in Fort Yates, North Dakota, on the Standing Rock Reservation. My childhood, I grew up in an alcoholic home, you know, dysfunctional, abusive, if I would say. And I became addicted at a very young age, the age of 12.
My goodness.
Yes.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I'm 37 now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you have a large family or?
Well, my mother had five children. And my dad has way more than that. But but in my mother's home, there was five of us, yes.
Yeah. How were you first introduced to alcohol, or how did you get it? How did you obtain it?
Well, alcohol, it was everywhere on the reservation. Family, siblings, you know. I did a lot of drugs and drank with my older sister.
Was that your DOC, drug of choice, alcohol?
At first.
Yeah, at first.
Marijuana. Yep.
I see.
I did it all.
Yeah. I mean, did it, how did it begin to affect your life? Did it affect your school?
Yes.
Go on. Yeah.
Yes. I went to jail for the first time at the age of 13. I was incarcerated for being intoxicated under the influence. I was sent away to boarding school.
Which one?
Flandreau Indian School.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I was out of Salby, South Dakota. I got caught with marijuana, and that was what the court ordered me down to the boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and yeah, that's just.
Yeah. So, when did you finally have enough? I mean, what brought you? Sounds like you went through a lot of trial and error, a lot of hardship.
Yes. Went to boarding school, came back. I got kicked out of boarding school for fighting. So I came back to Standing Rock. I graduated there. I was always academically, I was fine. I graduated high school at the age of 16.
Wow.
But I was drunk there, you know, and I was still able to, you know, function or do enough to where I
do
passed.
Enough, yeah.
Yes. And I went on to college where... I went on to college when I was 20 years old, got a 2-year degree in tribal management, but I got into methamphetamine then. And I thought I would do it on the weekends. I would take muscle relaxers on Sunday so I would go to sleep. I got pregnant had my first son then, and I was trying to juggle school and taking care of him. And it was just, my sister would watch him for me on the weekends while I would get high. And then I would crash Sunday, taking downers, and then go again all week, normal again. And that went on. I was able to graduate with my degree there.
Yeah.
I went and moved to.
Mind if I ask you, how did you use the meth?
I smoked it then and snorted. Yep. And then I went on to Black Hills State University, and I was in an abusive relationship, physically abusive, very violent, with my older son's dad, and ended up quitting school, moving home, and I just kept going with the meth, you know. And then it went on to pills, heroin. I began injecting, and then I went to prison 3 times.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. What were some of the charges?
I had a possession charge. Possession of meth, paraphernalia charges, theft. I stole a lot to get my fix. I went to prison, and that's when I finally just had enough, you know?
Right. When you came out, you mean? Or you made that decision
made that decision incarcerated, yes.
Yeah. Well, good.
After the third time, I mean.
Yeah. And how old were you then?
I was, 36? 35 years old.
Well, I think, you know, I think thinking about all that, for you to be sitting here talking about recovery with us is maybe kind of a miracle, huh? You've been through a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
As you look back on all of that, what are your main thoughts?
Wow. I mean, I made it. I'm alive. I have hope today. When I first established, when I made the decision that I had no more excuses, you know, and I didn't want that way of life. I wanted something different. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror, you know, and the shame and everything that I had. And now today, you know, I'm able to, you know, self-love. I'm teaching myself, you know, to love myself, and the shame I don't carry no more. And I have hope today, you know, and it's just, it's great.
What are some of the keys to your recovery? Keys to your recovery or secrets to your recovery?
Keys to my recovery. Yeah. Honesty.
Yeah.
For one, with myself, because if I'm not honest with myself, I'm done, you know, and I'll just, and my higher power is the main thing. I mean, I credit my recovery to my higher power, because without that, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Right. We're going to get personal here. So who or what is your higher power?
Jesus.
Okay.
I believe in Jesus and the Bible and yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So honesty.
Honesty.
What else?
And learning. And I had learning, staying open-minded, because I was a prideful person. Very entitled. You know, the world owed me, everything. And I have to, it's a process for me, because I have to like self-talk myself, you know, and be like, you know, you're going to be open-minded. You're going to go into the situation. It's just a process in my head. And I have to be able to receive information in order to learn, you know, because growing up like that, I was so closed. Closed off from everything, and everything was about me. I was such a selfish person, and you know, I didn't. Yeah, my eyes were closed, basically. You know, and
yeah,
and going. I go to meetings.
I attend.
I don't know if I can.
Well, usually we say we go to self-help meetings.
Yes, you know, self-help meetings. Yeah. Yep, I attend.
Or support meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, support meetings. I am a peer support specialist.
Oh, good for you! Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I enjoy. I do that like 3-4 times a week.
Did you take that training recently?
Yes.
Peer support. Good. Yeah. Tell you know, for listeners, tell us what a peer support specialist or what a peer support person does.
A peer support specialist basically walks with you. You know, we can give transportation to and from meetings, whatever, self-help meetings, whatever we do, you know, church. You know, we're basically there just to walk with you.
Mm-hmm.
Our job.
Yeah. And what does that do for the peer support specialist? Does that?
Well, that helps as well in my recovery. It just gives me a whole new perspective, and I get so much from giving back.
Yeah, they say giving is selfish, right? Because we get so much out of it. How many hours is the training, and where did you take that?
I took the training here. It was the first training offered with the Free Through Recovery Program by the governor's wife. She is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was up at the hotel. I forget what the hotel is called, up north.
Sure.
And it was a week long.
Yeah, so about 40 hours worth, right?
Yes, hours of training.
I know quite a few people who have taken that now.
Yes.
That peer support training, and it's really spreading. Catherine Helga Spurgum is the name of our First Lady, who's done so much to spread the word and to try to erase the stigma.
Yes.
Of addiction. So tell us a little bit about what you're pursuing now. You're going into social work, or you want to work in the field of addiction and recovery, or
I'm continuing my education. I have a 2-year right now. I'm getting another one in the mental health and human services. I attend United Tribes Technical College. Mm-hmm. I'll graduate in December.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my compassion or my heart is to help, and to help people, you know, reentry work, coming out of prison, in the addiction and in the pain that I experienced, you know.
Sure, sure. You can. You've been there.
Yes, I've been there.
Been there, done that. You know, you have the empathy, of course. What about gratitude? Is that part of your?
Yes.
It sounds like it is.
Yes, so, very. That's just the number one. You know, I have to remind myself constantly about being thankful. And if anything, I grew up, you know, my parents were, you know, we weren't rich, but we had what we needed. And so I was a self, you know, I was a brat, entitled. And at the same time, I was just ungrateful for everything. And being incarcerated taught me a lot, you know, and gratitude was one.
Mm-hmm. What else did it teach you, the being incarcerated? Did you go to a program while you were in incarceration?
I went through treatment in mm-hmm. the, you know, Department of Corrections.
Good.
Yep. And, you know, they taught me some skills that I still use. You know, they use the SABISA curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that has taught me some things. And I just try to take whatever and put it in my toolbox, you know, wherever I go. Mm-hmm. If I learn some, keep it. You know, if I don't, well, okay, you know, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah. How about your family relationships now?
My family relationships now are amazing. I mean, you know, I'm able to, like, my dad used to be a huge trigger, you know, and he was only trying to help. He was the person, he never gave up on me, you know.
Yeah.
He would come, you know, bail me out of jail, whatever was necessary, you know, he was there making sure as long as I was okay, or, you know, to as okay as I could be, or, you know, and I was horrible to my whole family. I would steal, lie, you know, everything to them. And now I'm able to just, you know, I love them and they love me just the way I am now. And the restoration in my relationships is wonderful, you know, and with my children, you know, when I first got locked up, my son was 8. He's 17 now. And you know, at first it wasn't going to be all roses and rainbows, you know. And I understand he had his own feelings towards me. You know, he had a lot of unforgiveness, a lot of resentments towards me. And I'm respectful of his emotions. And our relationship is unfolding great. You know, his wall's coming down. And I could see he's starting to trust me.
Good.
You know, and because I came out of prison, twice and went back to the same crap. You know, and they would bring my kids to come visit me, and you know, and then I broke their hearts, you know, over and over, you know.
Yeah.
But now I have I have three sons, Drayden, Dace, and Jeffrey.
Yeah.
And now I have all three of my children home. And
wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're doing great. Yes.
You know, you probably heard me mention that I'm a certified grief counselor, and I run a grief support group for Hurt View patients once a week. And, you know, the loss of children through loss of custody, losing custody is way at the top of the list for grief. I mean, when you think about grief, the first thing you think about is losing someone to death, you know, but there's lots of reasons, especially there are a lot of reasons why people in recovery grieve, or why addicts grieve, because I'm in long-term recovery, because we've lost everything at one point in our lives.
And I actually remember being incarcerated, when I made the decision to recover or to not, you know, to choose a different way, I had so much fear and everything. And I actually remember grieving and, you know, telling my friends, you know, I'm like, when I was leaving the prison, I was like looking at them, and I all used with them on the streets and everything, you know. And I remember telling them, I was like, wow, you guys, I said, I'm not coming back, you know. And I said, I'm not going to hang out with you guys no more. And I remember, like, I was like, I'm sad, you know. And I just remember, like, grieving that. I'm like, geez, you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, I didn't know who I was going to be. I didn't know the person that I'm becoming.
Yeah.
And that I am today, you know. She's new, you know. I've been addicted since I was 12, so it's like,
yeah, good point. And that, and you brought it up. So we addicts, we are grieving over the loss of a lifestyle.
Yes.
You know, we're saying goodbye to that lifestyle that we were so used to.
Yep.
And those friends and you know, turning over a new leaf and becoming a new person. And that's why we say in therapy, we so often, and you hear it at support groups too, you only have to change everything. You know, you only, I mean, you,
yeah.
that's a tall order. You can't really hang out with the same friends, especially if they're using. Another saying is you really find out who your friends are.
Yeah, yes, yep.
And yeah, there's some grief there. I felt for quite a while grief and anger, thinking, how am I ever going to have fun again? Because you know, I'm not sure I can go through life straight, you know.
Yeah.
So there's some grief, you know, and so many times we've lost jobs. We've certainly lost opportunities.
Yes.
We've lost relationships. We've lost homes.
Money. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yes. Getting bonded out of jail. I was like, oh, so, you know, yeah. All kinds of.
Yeah. How about the spiritual side for you? Is that an important component of your
yes.
recovery?
It's mm-hmm. the main component.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, like I said, I credit everything to Jesus for saving me. You know, I got saved and
it just
changed my whole life.
Yes.
You know, and yeah, I felt the love of God and I took my obsession to my addiction, you know, and I was praying, getting to, you know my higher power, getting to know Jesus while I was incarcerated. And I prayed, you know, because I was done shooting up. You know, I would stick a needle in my neck 3-4 times a day, you know, and I was just done. And he took my addiction away from me. And then I was like, wow, you know, I laid out this past time and I was like, well, now what? You know, I'm like,
yeah.
Now what? I was like, wow. Yeah. And things would happen. I had a death in my family. I've experienced, I had two sisters I lost to alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. One was 37. The other one was 28. And I just buried her on December 4th.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And, but I was able to stay sober and you know what? Yeah. And am I able to just, you know, lean on Jesus to carry me, you know, and it's great. And I was never, you know, into my spirituality before. I was never in my life have I thought I would be here where I'm at, you know, and it's great.
And that does, you know, that does sound like a miracle. You know,
yes.
I lost a daughter years ago.
Oh,
about 12 years ago. And I was in recovery. And I promise you, I mean, during that week, the most horrible week of my life, I never wanted to drink. And so I certainly realized that that desire had somehow been lifted from me. It's just no longer part of me or part of my life. And that's miracle talk, you know,
because yes.
I did, you know, at one point I didn't think I could live without it. And now it's, you know, the furthest thing from my mind, really.
Yes, it's like, for me, it's like, I rethought about it. I'm like, wow, I can't believe I didn't even think to, oh, let's go get a hit, or, you know, it wasn't an option.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. How about a support group? Do you have a pretty good support group now? And beyond family, or?
When I got out of incarceration, I have a relative, a cousin that's in recovery with me. But other than that, I stay away because most of my family is either in active addiction or, you know, and I just, until relationships could, you know, come together a little more, like I just stay, you know, I choose to stay away and love them at a distance. And I heard this one saying where it was like, if you ever want to know where you're at in your recovery, go around family because, you know,
I understand
because they'll show you, you know, where
where all the triggers
are. Yes,
yes. You know, where all the buttons, yes. the hot buttons. I've heard that phrase, the one you used earlier, you learn how to love them from a distance.
Yes.
And that's, you hear that a lot in therapy and in recovery circles. We, and as you know, we usually tell our patients, block them from your cell phones. You know, you can, those people that you thought were your friends, because, you know, and some of them do turn out to be true blue friends. But I mean, oftentimes you're just better off blocking them and, or getting a new number or both, you know. So, boy, you've been through a lot. I mean, so for people who are listening to this radio program, and we broadcast this twice a week, and I should remind people, we're talking to Margot Walking Elk, and she's a person in long-term recovery. And by the way, these programs are also podcasted on the Radio Access website, which is, you can get to it through the Dakota Media Access website too. But so for people who are listening to the program, what's your advice? I mean, the people who know that they have a problem and they've been putting it off. And what's your best advice? You know, they know they have a problem. They know they have to do something about it. Now what?
My advice is it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to, you know, be the new person. It's okay to come and, you know, find encouragement and find hope. And, you know, you get strength from people that have been there, and it's okay, you know, just to come and, you know, we learn from you too, you know, and.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to one of those support group meetings.
Yep.
Show up.
Show up. And even if you don't, you know, even if you don't talk, even if you don't, you know, participate, show up. And, you know, if you're open up to, if you're really done, you're willing to go to any length, you know, the gift of desperation is amazing.
I like that phrase. the gift of desperation.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. It's and another one I heard is where your fear becomes, you know, where your pain becomes greater than your fear.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And
we've all heard the phrase, you have to hit bottom first. Do you believe in that?
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, I had many bottoms then. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
do you think it's necessary to hit bottom?
Well, I mean, they're probably, I don't know. I mean, everybody's probably different. But, you know, there has to be a breaking point somewhere. You know, mm-hmm. where you're just done. I mean, you know, I was totally hopeless and, you know, before, and couldn't see the end, you know?
Sure.
And probably, basically, I was just wanting to die, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And so my incarceration saved my life, and, you know, surrendering my life to Jesus gave me a new one, you know, filled with hope and,
Hope is such an important word.
Yes. Hope is an important word. Without that, we're... Yes.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to addiction.
Yes.
And recovery. If you're hopeless, good luck. I mean, it's just you have to... and I pray that those of you who are hopeless will find that hope somewhere.
Yes.
You know, somewhere, some way. We certainly see at Heartview that hope can be that people find hope there every day. I hope, you know, in one way or another, and of course, mm-hmm. people find hope at the support group meetings,
yes.
In church,
and for me, well, I go to a Bible study too, mm-hmm. and the lady that I believe God put in my path mm-hmm. to help mm-hmm. me in my recovery. She just loved me and accepted me right where I was at, how I was. And that was really a turning point in my recovery as well.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. A mentor.
Yes. You know, mentor. Yeah. You can call them mentors.
Sure.
You call them sponsors.
Sponsors. Spiritual advisors.
Yes. Accountability partner, whatever. You know, just there's people out there that just,
Yes.
That extend that love to you, you know, and
it's non-judgmental.
Yes, non-judgmental, treat you like a human being, you know, and just
right.
You know.
Yeah. You know what? We only have about 3 minutes left. Didn't it go fast?
Yes.
We're talking to Margot Walking Elk, who's from who's originally from the Fort Yates area. What are your hopes for your children? That's a good way to something positive.
My hopes for my children are hopefully they don't have to go through the struggle of addiction, you know, because I overcame that. Hopefully they don't have to, you know. I want them to be successful and, you know, being able to do all the things that I didn't do, you know, as a kid growing up, whatever, you know, just having a healthy life, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that may look like, whatever they want to do, you know, as long as, you know, as long as they're not incarcerated and going through the hell like I was, you know, I'm fine with whatever.
Yeah. And there's no greater example than you. I mean, the best teaching is your life.
Yes.
To show them.
Yeah, my
how to be.
My 13-year-old son told me, he was like, out of nowhere one day, he was just like, "Wow, Mom," he's like, "aren't you proud of yourself?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, Mom, you know," he said, you don't get high anymore. He's like, "We come home." He's like, "You're different."
Wow.
You know, hearing that from him, it was great. You know, just melted my heart. And
isn't that great?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes me all teary eyed to hear, you know, to hear that, you know, and I think we who are in recovery, myself included, I mean. Probably the most important thing we can do is to show people that it's possible.
Yes.
Is to demonstrate.
Yes.
And that might give them hope. You know, by our own lives, we're saying it is possible. It can be done. Look at me. I was in the gutter, and
yes.
And here I am. And if I can do it, you know.
Yes.
Then I think you can do it too. You know. Yeah. Anything else you wanted to add, or anything that I, any question I didn't ask you?
No.
Well, thanks for being on the program. Thanks for having the courage, you know, and we end the program every time with the Serenity Prayer.
Okay.
So let's do that. And God grant me the serenity.
To accept the things I cannot change.
The courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I sing a song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it.